Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Our Thanksgiving week specials continue as we have Timothy P. Brown join us and talk about a very exciting and memorable historic football game for Thanksgiving. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Before we get into our episode today, let's take the time to drill that football right into the like and subscribe button on your console so you know exactly when the notifications come up of the latest releases of Pigskin Dispatch Podcast for some more great football history. Now on to our episode. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to visit with Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you again. And I do not have a dad joke to open this one. I just feel like we got to get right into it. You know,
I'm very thankful for that. It's making my holiday season very thankful.
Yeah, sorry.
So I had to come up with a dad joke, but this is, of course, is a segue into Tim's article that he wrote called The 1932 Colgate Brown Thanksgiving Game for the Rose Bowl. Tim, there is a long title there, a lot of information. What can you tell us about this story?
Yes. So I guess think just background. One of the things, I've always loved the fact that Washington and Jefferson went to the Rose Bowl, you know, and they were in the 22 Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's a D3 school now. So it's just cool that, you know, that they played in the Rose Bowl and they deserved it, you know, at the time. So, but Colgate's another one of those.
Somebody should write a book about them sometime.
Yeah, I know. I've heard some people have expressed interest. But anyways, I mean, it's just the Colgate story is really kind of fun too, because there's just a bunch of little dimensions to it. And it, as it worked out, like at one point I was a GA at Colgate. My brother was playing for Brown at the time. So we have always had a little bit of a match on that. But so anyways, there was a, so the coach at Colgate in 1932 is a guy named Andy Kerr. And, you know, depending on, you know, your interest in football history, you may not know of him, but he was a great coach. And he actually started coaching at Pitt as the basketball coach. So he was head basketball coach there and the assistant football. And he was there before Pop Warner showed up. Warner was still at Carlisle. So anyways, Warner comes to Pitt. And so he's assisting Warner. And in 1921, Warner signs a contract with Stanford to become their coach. But he still had 2 years left on his Pitt contract. So Pitt says, you're staying here for 2 years. So Warner sent Kerr out to be the coach at Stanford. You know, his Pitt assistant went to coach for 2 years at Stanford, stayed another year or two, and then he left. And then he took over at Washington Jefferson in 25 and then Colgate in 29. So he was, at least offensively, he was by then a Warner disciple. So he ran a passing-oriented double wing, and, you know, Warner had developed the double wing off of the single wing, and he developed some great teams. So his 29, and let me just say, they played at that time, they played probably as strong an Eastern schedule as most people. You know, they had their puppies that they played at the beginning of the season, but they each year they played a couple of what are now Big Ten teams, Penn State, Michigan State, Indiana, you know, whomever. They always played Syracuse, they always played Brown. That was their, you know, kind of a rivalry game at the end of the season. So they played a pretty strong schedule. And in 29, they went 8-1, outscoring their opponents 315-19. In 1930, they went 9-1, outscoring their opponents 383-27. In 31, they went 8-1, outscoring their opponents 227-24. And in the first eight games of the 1932 season, they were 8-0 and had outscored their opponents 243-0. So they were
I don't
entering.
know, but that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah,
Those
yeah, yeah.
numbers.
And especially given, you know, given the schedule that they were playing. You know, I mean, they weren't playing all puppies, right? So then, you know, by then, Colgate and Brown had developed a rivalry that they would play each Thanksgiving, you know, for the, you know, final game of the year. Colgate's main rival was Syracuse, but, you know, the Brown one was pretty big too. So they've got this, you know, so Colgate's going into this game undefeated, unscored upon. And then Brown was also undefeated, and they had allowed 19 points to that so far in the season. They were also 8-0. And they had beaten seven of the eight teams they beat were undefeated the day that they beat them. So, you know, just kind of the way the schedule worked out. So it was built up. You know, the Rose Bowl reached out to Colgate's president about, you know, would they accept, blah, blah, blah. And so it was kind of built up in the national press. You know, Pitt was still kind of the favorite in, you know, in terms of being thought of as the best team in the East. But a lot of people were saying, hey, whoever wins this Brown Colgate game should go to the Rose Bowl. And so, but you know, I mean, there were other, you know, talented teams too. So anyways, you know, the game, you know, it's this big deal and it's played in Providence. So, you know, in the first quarter, it's a score, you know, scoreless first quarter. Colgate, I think, blocks a punt or something in the, or, you know, one way or another, short punt, they score in the second quarter. And then they get a safety off of a, they block a punt and get a safety. And then in the third or in the fourth quarter, they score two more touchdowns. Oh, and one other thing I forgot to mention. A school called West Liberty led the nation in scoring that year. And they had scored 20 more points that season than Colgate. So Colgate needed 21 points in the game, and West Liberty's season was over. So Colgate needed 21 points against Brown to be the national scoring leader. So what do they score in the game? 21 points. So
Waste not,
anyways,
want not.
so I mean, it was just one of those. So Colgate ends up winning, and you know they're all just, you know, giddy. But you know, at the time, the way the Rose Bowl worked is that the Pacific Coast Conference team that won the conference, or at least was named to be the Rose Bowl nominee, they got to pick whoever they wanted to play. And they picked Pitt. So who went out there? USC beat Pitt 35-0. So, you know, who knows?
That would have been like Jock Sutherland. Was he coaching
Yeah,
Pitt then?
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
okay.
And yeah, because Warner was out at you know, Stanford by then. So anyways, I mean, it's just like so they were famously, you know, the famous line is that they were undefeated, untied, unscored upon, and uninvited. But you know, they're also the last major college team, because they were major college at that point, the last major college team to go through a season without being scored on. So Duke went through the regular season in 1938 and was scored on in the Rose Bowl. And Tennessee went through the 1939 season unscored on. And then they got scored on in the Rose Bowl as well. So, maybe if Colgate had gone out to the Rose Bowl, maybe they get scored on out there. Who knows?
Yeah, and I never do know.
But it
Yeah.
didn't happen. So, anyways, just kind of one of those cool things. But over that 4 year stretch, I mean, this is, Kerr was a really good coach. And over that 4 year stretch, when offenses didn't score all that much, his team averaged almost 33 points a game and gave up two. So, I mean, that's pretty good combination. So,
Yeah, that'll win you a few ball games, I think.
yeah. So, anyways, it's just kind of a cool story, and but
Yeah.
they never went to a bowl game.
Never made it though, huh?
No.
Wow, and that is definitely that's a really cool story. Especially you're hearing these names. I mean, I think even people on the periphery have probably heard of Andy Kerr, because he's did a lot of great things and was a great coach. And just to hear this specific season and this specific game, that's really cool to put it in perspective.
Yeah. Well, he coached the Eastern Shrine Bowl team a number of years too. So, he had to be, well regarded within the coaching profession. But he stayed there till, just after World War II. So he was coached there for about 20, 27 years, something in that range.
Wow.
So maybe it was 17, maybe my math is wrong. 29 to 46. Yeah.
Good long time. When you've
Yeah, yeah,
got
yeah.
decades on your coaching resume, that's a pretty good thing. And especially all the different schools he coached at and had some good success. Definitely an icon of coaching from football history. And you talk about these people that maybe that most folks don't hear about or don't appreciate what they provided to the game of football, and you preserve them in your tidbits that you write. Maybe you could share with folks how they can take in some of these tidbits.
Yeah, just go to footballarchaeology.com and subscribe. I'm also just in the process of, starting a YouTube channel. I'm going to be competing with this, right?
Oh yeah,
So,
big competition there.
yeah. So, yeah. So anyways, I'm going to try it, see how it works. Maybe I'm better at the written word, or we'll see, but, yeah, other than that, just, go to the site, or just, bookmark it, and if you subscribe on the site, then you'll get an email every time that I publish a new article.
All right. Well, Tim, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing this great piece of football history. We're a little upset that you're taking away some of our Nielsen ratings, but
Yeah, well,
we're preserving football history.
hey, a man's got to eat. A man's got to
I
eat.
gotcha. I gotcha. Yeah, we welcome you anytime to the arena. It's a great thing to have more out there. It lets more people appreciate more things on great media channels of YouTube and wherever video is shown, and the written word too. So we appreciate you coming on here each Tuesday to help us tell the story of football, and love to talk to you again next Tuesday.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not-so-great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.